Thank you once again for joining us. It's fantastic to see everybody, or at least those that I can see. And I welcome you to part two in our series of the six habits of highly effective Jewish people, where we focus on six critical midos to be able to excel as human beings and to be the best Jews that we can be. We began the series last week with a shiur about chesed and the importance of being able to give to others as a way that ultimately boomerangs and helps us grow. And I'd like to move on today and speak about a second critical midah, and that is empathy. In the language of Chazal, as indicated in the Mishnah in the sixth chapter of Pirkei Avos, empathy is described or referred to as nosei ba'ol im chavero. Interestingly, it takes a few words in Hebrew to say what we can say in English in one word. Nosei ba'ol im chavero literally means carrying the burden with somebody else. And I think it's actually quite a profound way of referring to it by Chazal. We know that if you had to carry something incredibly heavy and someone else helped you carry the load itself wouldn't become lighter. If you were trying to carry, a piece of furniture up the steps and it weighed, 150 pounds, it wouldn't all of a sudden get lighter if someone else was carrying it. It's still the same 150 pounds, but two or three people carrying it, all of a sudden that distributes the weight and now you yourself feel the burden less. Similarly, I think Chazal are telling us that we can empathize with someone else when someone we know, could be a loved one, a family member, or a friend, someone that we know and we can truly empathize with their pain, that doesn't necessarily mean that the pain goes away. The burden, so to speak, can stay the same, but the very fact that it's now shared with somebody else distributes that weight, distributes the pain a little bit, and lessens the burden. If you've ever been on the receiving end of someone else's, not only compassion, but empathy, then you know what I'm speaking about. And I'd like to address this incredibly basic and necessary human emotion and midah and characteristic through the lens of Chazal, and I think demonstrate how significant and how important and profound Chazal viewed this particular midah as being something that not only can be incredibly impactful on other people, but in a somewhat similar way to what we saw last week, can in fact truly get us in touch with who we really, really are. And I want to divide the talk into a few different parts, as brief as our time is, and start by highlighting the fact that if one looks at any of the literature, going back to Chazal and Tanakh, about leadership, and especially when we view through the lens of Moshe Rabbeinu's development, the ultimate leader of the Jewish people, there is an incredibly high and even disproportionate emphasis on the midah, on the characteristic of being empathic, of having this midah of empathy, of nosei ba'ol im chavero. So briefly, just a few examples from the story of Moshe, and we see that from beginning to end, Moshe's career, if you will, is suffused directly and indirectly with demonstrations of his empathy, as well as signals to him about the importance of empathy. So for example, in source number one on your sheet, in Shmos and Perek Bet, the very first thing, literally the very first thing that the Torah tells us that Moshe did as an active participant, we know that we are going to hear Moshe's name after this introduction hundreds and hundreds of times. He does so many things, but the very first thing that the Torah tells us about Moshe is that he grew up in the palace, he's been adopted by Bas Paro, and he goes out one day, Vayetze el Achav, Vayar b'sivlosam. He sees their suffering. He sees the Jewish people suffering. Rashi points out, source number two, what does that mean? Vayar b'sivlo sam. Rashi deepens the behavior of Moshe. He highlights it. He sharpens it. Nasan einav v'libo lios meitzar aleihem. And I think it's critical to note that Rashi really divides up Moshe's behavior into two parts. First is nasan einav. He noticed that other people were suffering. It sounds obvious or even silly, right? But how often in life do we walk by people, sometimes quite literally, depending on where we live, we could be walking by people on the street or on the train, or more figuratively, but we pass through life very often busy with our own life, busy with good things, and we don't even see, we don't even know about the people who could be down the block from us, sitting next to us in shul. We don't even know that they're suffering. So first of all, you have to have eyes open. Nasan Einav, Moshe saw the suffering of other people. But more importantly, perhaps, is that it wasn't just that he saw it, because you can see it and keep on walking. But rather, says Rashi, Nasan Einav, Velibo. Moshe took it to heart. He was empathic. He truly felt their pain. Lios Meitzar Aleihem. In other words, it is incredible to consider that of all the things we could have been told about Moshe first, the very first one we were told about is that Moshe, from a very young age, even before he began his career as a leader, Moshe is by nature evidently a genuinely empathic person. Moreover, in the next source, we read in the next perek, in Perek Gimel of Shmos, about when Hashem initially reveals himself to Moshe and gives him the big news that he wants to redeem the Jewish people, and gives Moshe the command, the very big news for Moshe, that he is going to be the designated leader to liberate the Jewish people. And of course, this revelation, this nevuah, takes place at the burning bush. As the pasuk says in source number 3, that Moshe sees this Malach Hashem, and it appears to him, Balavas Eish, in a fire, Mitoch HaSneh. And of course, the pasuk continues, this is the burning bush that is not devoured. Mitoch HaSneh. And evidently, as Rashi quotes from the Medrash, the understanding is that a sneh is a kind of a thorn bush. And Rashi, in source number 4, quotes the implicit question that Chazal have, which is, if Hashem could appear to Moshe out of all manners and all forms, why would he appear to Moshe specifically through a sneh, through a thorn bush? Now, you might be tempted to answer, and I'll peep shot, this may very well be correct, that what else would you find in a desert but kind of thorn bushes? Okay, I hear that, but it doesn't surprise me or bother me that Chazal are looking for something deeper. After all, this is a miraculous occurrence. This is a prophetic revelation, a miraculous bush that's being burned without consumed. Once you're going ahead and making that kind of a miracle, theoretically Hashem could have done it from anything. So why specifically this barren kind of thorn bush? So Rashi tells us from Chazal in source number 4, Lo ilan acher, it's deliberate, it's not a coincidence that it was from a thorn bush and not some other tree, not a coincidence at all, but rather Mishum, Imo Anochi Bitzara. It was Hashem's way of conveying to Moshe, Kaviyochol, that he himself, he with the capital H, he himself, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, felt the pain of the Jewish people. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as it were, Kaviyochol, was empathic and genuinely felt the pain. Not only does this, I think, highlight how important the Midah is, and there are numerous other examples in Chazal of Hashem, of attributing to God, to Hashem, that he feels the pain of the Jewish people, but the very fact that we have this example highlighting that Hashem feels our pain, that Hashem is empathic with our suffering, that alone clearly demonstrates the importance of this characteristic and this Midah. But I think, in light of the idea I'm trying to develop, I think it's actually a subtle and additional point as well, which is that it was important for Hashem to communicate to Moshe that this is a key ingredient, not only in being a human being, but also in being a leader, that Moshe, from the beginning of his mission, needed to know that it wasn't just something that you could do and do it well as kind of a technocrat, if you will, but keeping, you know, your work and your person at arm's length from each other. No, Moshe, you're being told, just like Hashem truly felt the pain of the Jewish people, Moshe himself needed to feel that pain. That was the genuine nature of what it means to be a leader. And I think this gets followed up in source number 5, when right afterwards, Hashem tells him, the voice in the sneh tells Moshe, Shal na'alecha me'al raglecha, take your sandals, take your shoes off of your feet, because this land in which you're standing on, this desert sand that you're standing on, admas kodeshu, it's holy or sanctified land. What does that mean? In what way is that possibly sanctified? And why do you have to take off your shoes? Because it is sanctified. And I saw many years ago a beautiful interpretation of this from the Chiddush Harim, the founding Gera Rebbe, the grandfather of the Sfas Emes, who explained, very much consistent and in keeping with the idea we're developing, that Hashem in essence was telling Moshe, listen, you're going to go to the Jewish people and announce that you are their leader and you're coming to be the prophet of their redemption. It is only reasonable that they're going to be wondering, how are you possibly going to be our leader? Why are you? of all people suitable to be the one who liberates us. You who grew up in the palace of Paro, you who grew up as a royal prince, you who grew up with silk slippers, as it were, how can you possibly relate to us? What do you know of our suffering that you're coming to tell us, don't worry, I'm here to save you? You don't even know what we've been through. And the answer is, of course, Moshe cannot truly duplicate the life that they had in the slave pits because he was saved from it. Nothing you could do about that. But says the Chiddush Arim, Hashem is telling Moshe at the immediate dawn of his leadership mission, Shal na'alecha me'araglecha, take your shoes off of your feet and feel, if even for a moment, feel the scorching hot desert sand on your bare feet. Feel, if only for a minute, if only partially, feel what it must be like for your Jewish brothers and sisters in their backbreaking labor. This is Admas Kodeshu. This land is sanctified. Sanctified with the suffering of your brothers and sisters. Sanctified through the Jewish blood that has been spilled by the Egyptian taskmasters. You have to truly be able to feel that in the most visceral, physical way. Feel their pain. Only then can you be their leader. And last but not least, on this point, before we conclude this opening section of the shiur, I want to share with you a remarkable, remarkable, unforgettable interpretation of the Baal HaTurim, going back to the beginning of the Moshe story. And that is when we have baby Moshe. Baby Moshe, who is kept hidden and nursed a little bit in the early stages of his life. Eventually his parents know the jig is up, they're going to get caught. So they put Moshe in the little basket, they send him off floating down the river. And meanwhile, as we read in the Torah, his sister's watching from afar. And what does she see? Lo and behold, eventually Bas Paro and all of her servants come, and they notice the baby. And the Torah tells us in source number 6, V'tiftach v'tirehu es hayeled, she sees this child, the yeled, v'hine hana'ar boche, and the na'ar, the lad, is crying. And as the pasuk continues, she has compassion on the baby, v'tamar, and she states to the people around her, Miyaldi ha'ivrim zed, this must be a Jewish baby floating in the river. All of the Mefarshim, or many of the Mefarshim, are very sensitive to the inconsistency in the language in source number 6, describing Moshe. On the one hand, he's described as a yeled, as a boy, or probably as a baby in that sense. And then, two words later, he's described as a na'ar, which I translated as a lad, but generally is understood to mean someone somewhat older than that. You can't be both a yeled and a nar. They refer to different stages of development. There's an infant, there's a child, there's an adolescent. They're not the same thing. And there's different interpretations that are suggested. But comes along the Baal HaTurim in source number 7 and gives a most remarkable, unforgettable interpretation, which is perfectly consistent with everything we have seen. For those of you who aren't familiar, the Baal HaTurim, who was not only one of the great Rishonim, but he was a great halachist, and so to speak, the meat and potatoes, the bread and butter of halacha, was a very, very straight thinker, if you will. His commentary on the Torah actually is very different style. He actually very often has very, very creative and brilliant, from a certain perspective, gematrias. Many of his own original gematrias. He has all sorts of profound insights based on the numerical value of the letters of the words. We know there's a tradition that every letter in the Hebrew alphabet corresponds to a number. Aleph is 1, Bet is 2, Gimel is 3, etc., etc. And says the Baal HaTurim, when the Pasuk says Na'ar Boche, which doesn't sound like it's consistent, Moshe was still a baby, he was a Yeled. The Pasuk already said he's a Yeled. So how come now it says the Na'ar is Boche? So says the Baal HaTurim, source number 7, Ze'aron Shenichaso Eitzel HaTeva. What a groundbreaking chiddush. Did anyone ever know that before? We always were taught, the Torah tells us, that Miriam was watching to see what was going on. It's Miriam who steps in when Bas Paro says, I can't find anyone, this baby won't nurse. We all know that. It's in the Psukim. It's part of our legacy. We all know the story. But says the Baal HaTurim HaChiddush, Aaron was also there. Aaron was there. And when the Torah tells us that Na'ar Boche, it doesn't mean that Moshe was crying. No, read the pasuk, v'tireu es hayeled. The baby is floating along nicely in the river. V'hine na'ar boche. But the lad, the older brother, the teenager, Aaron, was crying. Bas Paro heard a sound from the banks of the river. She looks to her left, to her right, and she sees there's a young boy older than that baby. It's Aaron who's crying. How does he know this, the Baal HaTurim? An amazing creative gematria, he points out at the end of source number 7, that the words Na'ar Boche are the same gematria as Ze Aaron HaKohen. Now, I'm not interested in convincing you that this is a persuasive way of reading Psukim and Chumash. I'm not even going to do the math to figure out if the numbers work out. As far as I'm concerned, this goes into the category of too good to verify. The insight is astounding and remarkable. And the upshot, and this is what you need to understand, the upshot that comes from this Baal HaTurim is incredible. Because what does it mean? Let's reread the Pasuk now in light of the Baal HaTurim. V'tiftach v'atireyu es hayeled. Bas Paro sees a baby floating in the river. V'hinei na'ar bocha. And someone else who evidently cares so much for this child, someone else is standing on the banks of the river. Someone else is watching over this child. Someone else is crying for this child. And when she realizes all of that, Bas Paro says, V'tomar, miyalde ha'ivrim zeh. Now I know this is Yiddish a kinder. Now that I know this is a Jewish child. You know how I know? Because na'ar boche. Someone else is crying over this child. Jews cry over each other. Jews have empathy for each other. Jews have compassion for each other. Anyone can cry for themselves. But it's minar ha'ivrim, miyalde ha'ivrim. The Jewish people are so connected with each other, so compassionate, so caring. When I see someone crying for the baby, that's how I know that it's a truly Jewish child. What an incredibly creative, original, and powerful interpretation of the Baal HaTurim, underlying, in general, how important the midah of empathy is, and bino sebo chavero, and again, adding an extra layer, even more than we had seen previously, to the fact that the entire Moshe story, from the Baal HaTurim's perspective, mamish, from the beginning of his pre-career, everything in the story, the people around him, he himself, when Hashem meets him, everything, a recurring theme coming back time and time again, is the theme of empathy. It's no surprise, therefore, that among others, the famed Musar Master, the Altar of Kelim, thought that of all of the characteristics, perhaps the most important and the most key ingredient to being a good Jewish leader is empathy, is being nosei ba'olim chavero. And there are other examples in the Mordechai story and other examples throughout history, Yosef, others, but the paradigm of it all is Moshe. But I'd like to now turn our attention to the second half of our shiur and ask the simple question, which is why? Why is it so important? And it is clear that while it may be uniquely important to a Jewish leader, it is equally important and very important for every Jewish person, period. Every man and woman, every Jew needs to have as part of their personal development, as part of their midos checklist, that they have a very healthy, if not generous, dose of empathy as part of their personality. It's a critical midah. But why? What is so important for anyone, a leader or any of us, to have the midah of empathy? And I'd like to suggest that, broadly speaking, there are two incredibly critical benefits and results that can come out of a person having empathy. I'd like to start by making a first point. And my first point is that I think it's common sense, if we just think about it for a moment. It's one thing if we're asked to do a chesed, someone knocks at the door, asks us for money, there's an announcement through our local shul, we need help with such and such a thing, or our local day school. If we want to help because we're loyal, or we think it's a nice or worthy cause, we'll help in whatever way we can. But if there's something about that story and the need that the particular initiative is coming to address, if that grabs our heart, if we really, really feel the pain of that particular episode, whatever the thing is, whether it's to help with school lunches, whether it's to help with the local mikvah, the Talmud Torah, the shul, poor people, whatever the case is, but if we truly feel it, if we feel the pain and feel the need and feel the lack, then it just makes sense. It's common sense that we're going to be more proactive. We'll invest, we'll contribute, whether it's financially or with our time. We'll do more when we're truly, truly, our heart is in it. This is not only, I think, intuitive or obvious, but it's actually highlighted by a medrash. It's a medrash I didn't put on your sheet, but it's the medrash that's the source of the Rashi that we started with. How Moshe, when he saw the people enslaved in the pyramids, he went to help them. He cared about them. V'yar b'siv losam. Well, the medrash, which is Rashi's source, actually goes further than that. And the medrash describes with great detail how Moshe himself somehow snuck into the slave pits, snuck into the pyramid working areas, and was able to help the Jewish slaves. And I think the point that it's highlighting is exactly what we're mentioning. That once Moshe was nasa, not only einav, but libo, his heart was in it, so then he was willing to go the extra mile. He didn't just care. He didn't just say, wow, that's terrible. Maybe I'll go talk to my stepfather, Taparo. Maybe I'll write a blog. I'll write an op-ed. I'm not minimizing either of those things. There are all sorts of ways you can help people. Getting attention to worthy causes is also important. But Moshe did more than that. He rolled up his sleeves and he got involved. Why? Because he was empathetic. It truly makes a difference. And I want to highlight this, if I could, briefly by telling you an amazing story. A number of years ago, there was a Hasidic woman who had twins after many years of not being able to have children. And when the children were about a year and a half old, her husband realized it was the summertime. She could use some time off. And this is when the world was still normal. You could go away. And she went to one of these kosher hotels up in the mountains. Came Sunday and the husband realized, you know, I got to go back to work, but you're enjoying yourself so much. You stay here. So she's alone with the twins during the week. And one of the days she goes to the buffet lunch in the hotel and she has her twins. She gets them food, brings them back to the table. And then one at a time, she wants to take the children so they can go wash their hands before the meal. When she comes back with one of the children having washed the baby's hands, she gets to the table and the other one of the twins, the other child is missing. We can only imagine the terror and the fear she's gripped with. And she screams out in a shrill voice to the dining room, my child, my baby. Has anyone seen my baby? People, you know, of course, are grabbed by the attention. Everyone kind of looks around, kind of perfunctorily. No one sees anything, and knowing human nature the way we do it, unfortunately, people probably went back to eating their lunch. But of course, she's still crying, she's still screaming, at which point the day camp that was in this hotel, which was staffed by all sorts of Beis Yaakov girls, the day camp comes in for lunch, and they hear, the counselors hear, the mother screaming. And the head counselor, who's probably all of 16, 17 years old, she organizes the other counselors, and they start going room by room in the different areas of the hotel. They say, don't do anything, don't call the police yet, let us check. And as everyone is still panicked and worrying about it, and the mother is crying, one by one, the various camp counselors are looking in the different rooms of the hotel. And one by one, they come back to the main dining room, empty-handed. They haven't found the baby. And they're about to call the police. They're freaking out when all of a sudden, that head counselor, a few minutes later, she hadn't given up. She comes in. She found the baby. The mother is so grateful. She's crying. She hugs her child. And then when she finally gets her wits about her, she says to this young girl, I want to thank you so much. I can't thank you enough. But I have one question for you. How come when everyone else gave up, the other hotel guests, they looked a little bit, they gave up. Even the other counselors, they came back much sooner than you. But you kept on looking. You were pushing yourself. How come you went so far? How come you went further than anybody else? Said this girl with a little bit of a tear in her own eye. Her voice got soft. And she looked at this mother and she said, I'll tell you, I'm Leiby Kletsky's older sister. If you remember that horrible story, the Hasidic boy who was unfortunately kidnapped, and we found out later, murdered on his way home from school one day. But in those hours where we didn't know where he was, when his family realized he was missing, spontaneously, hundreds if not thousands of local Jews in Brooklyn made search groups and were looking all over for this boy. Unfortunately, when they found him, he had already been murdered. But says this young girl, I remember what it was like to have a loved one, my brother in that case, who was missing. And I remember how appreciative we were that there were people who were taking from their time to look for my brother. And that's an exactly example of the point we're making. A dramatic example, but a real example. When you're truly motivated to feel the pain, when you can relate, you'll go the extra mile. That's number one. Number two, with this we have 5 more minutes to conclude. Number two is that even if we can't, and the truth is sometimes we can't help. Sometimes people knock on the door, we hear about a cause, we can't always help. They need things we don't have. that need money we can't afford, we can't always help. We can't, even if we want to. Nevertheless, if we have the midah of empathy, it changes who we are. We mentioned briefly last week when it came to chesed, but in general, Rav Asher Weiss's pithy comment that it's not just about what we do, it's who we are, not just la'asot, but lihiyot. And here I think is a perfect example of that. I'll briefly mention, we'll skip sources 8 and 9 because we don't have time, but in sources 10 and 11 is amazing Gemara. The Gemara tells us, again, it's a big medrash, it's a tremendous drush, that Paro consulted with three people when he wasn't sure what to do with the Jewish people. Who was that? Eov, Yisro, and Bilam. He asked them, what should I do with the Jewish people? So the Torah, the Gemara and the Medrash tells us that Bilam said, kill them. And of course, Bilam ends up getting the worst punishment. Skipping ahead, Yisro knew he couldn't stop anything, but he didn't want to be a party to it. He ran away, and he ends up getting rewarded. But in the middle, at the end of the first line, there's source number 10, says, Eov Shasak. Eov didn't say a word, and as a result, Nidon v'Yisurim. He was punished terribly, and he suffered terribly. As we know, Eov is the paradigm of great suffering. Asked Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, the great Mir Rosh Hashiva, in source number 11, what did Eov do so terribly? Eov couldn't stop Paro. So he didn't say anything. Well, Yisro didn't stop him either. Yisro ran away. So said Reb Chaim Shmulevitz something so profound. He said there was a fundamental difference. Yisro felt the pain. He just couldn't do anything about it. Because he couldn't do anything about it, he ran away. But he did feel the pain. When the Medrash, when the Gemara says that Eov was quiet, what it means, he didn't feel anything. It didn't matter to him. He had nothing to say. It went in one ear and out the other ear. Said Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, that was the fundamental flaw in Eov. If Yisurim come to you, if you are cut, you'll cry out in pain. It's a human instinct. And if Eov had been empathetic for the situation of the Jewish people, then their pain would have been his pain. And he would have cried out when someone else was suffering. If you truly feel the pain of someone else, you'll react. You may not be able to solve the problem. Eov couldn't solve it either. But the fact that he didn't even cry out, he didn't feel their pain, that was worthy of a punishment. So I think that it's not only about what you can do motivated by empathy. Halavai, we can really do a lot and great things and help. But it's even when we can't do that, it makes us into a completely different person. And to conclude, I want to very briefly mention a tremendous insight of the Sha'arei Yoshar of Shimon Shkup in source number 13. Pirkei Avos in source number 12 has a very famous riddle. In the first parak of Pirkei Avos, we are told, "Em ein ani li mili ukshani la'atzmi ma'ani." If I am for myself, if I am not for myself, who am I? But if I am for myself, what am I? Well, the obvious contradiction, right? Am I supposed to care about myself or not? Em ein ani li mili. If I'm not for myself, who am I? Meaning, I should be for myself. But in the very next breath, "Ukshani la'atzmi ma'ani." But if I am for myself, then I'm a nobody. Then I'm a bad person. Well, which one is it? Should I be for myself or not? So Rav Shimon Shkup explains very beautifully. Again, I'm just giving it to you bakitzer so we can finish the next minute or two. Said Rav Shimon Shkup famously, it all depends on how you define the ani. Pirkei Avos keeps on talking about the ani. Well, how do you define the ani? For some people, the ani is just me. For other people, the ani is my family. I go into the pizza shop on a Thursday night, a Sunday night, and I say, can I have two pies of pizza? I need two pies of pizza. And the pizza guy looks at me and says, I don't think you do need two pies. Right? And the answer is, you. I don't mean I need it. I mean my family needs it. But I speak about my family. I say I need. That's not just a figure of speech. I'm not thinking about it, but if I would be thinking about it, it's actually genuine and it's profound and it's true. Because my family's needs are my needs. So said Rav Shimon Shkup, there's a second level of a person, a slightly greater level, who his ani is not just himself, it's his whole family. But then, said Rav Shimon Shkup, there's an even higher level where the whole Jewish people is ani. He cares about the Jewish people, not because he cares about other people, because he sees them as part of himself. It's one big ani. And therefore, he explains the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. Em ein ani li mili. If I'm not for myself, who am I? If I don't realize that the whole Jewish people is part of me, then all I am is just one little person. I'm a nothing. I'm a nobody. No matter who I am, I'm still only one. If I don't care about everybody else, if I don't see everyone as part of my ani, then who am I? I'm a nobody. But in the end of the Mishnah, Kishani Latzmi Mani, but if all I am is for myself, Kishani Latzmi, if the only person I see in the Ani is just Atzmi, is just myself, that first level, then Mani, what kind of a person am I? Should I care about myself or not? The answer is, it depends on how you define yourself. If you see a big Ani, if everyone is part of you, then of course you should care about yourself. But if all you see and care about is yourself, then who are you? Empathy enlarges our self, and we realize that we really are part of this larger group, our family in the greater Jewish community. That big Ani, which can be encompassed and expanded by empathy, that is not only the key to being a good person, it's the key to getting in touch with our true selves. I want to thank everyone for listening. I appreciate you coming to the shiur, and I wish you a wonderful day. And for those who can stay on, I hope you enjoy Rabbi Brand's shiur, which I'm sure will be amazing, and I'm sure will be starting in just a moment or two. Thank you all so much. Bye-bye.